Well, hello and welcome to another. What is it called? You know what I'm saying. Listen, if people are tuning in, they know what they're listening to, hopefully. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Lee. I hope they know what they're listening to.
Well, if you don't.
Well, if they don't and they tuned in by accident, stay with us. Don't go anywhere.
And let me know what it is that you're listening to. Anyway, it's you are listening to the Fair Game podcast. And today we have a guest with us, Mike. Would you like to do the honors?
As always, another special guest. Someone who I have known for a very, very long time. He was formerly a very senior official in the world of Scientology, particularly as an auditor and case supervisor. And he is joining us for what is the first of one of our deep dive episodes into, this time, the bridge. We're going to start at the bottom and work our way up. And
right. And for those who don't know, Bruce. Hi, Bruce. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Bruce Hines, everyone.
Hey, Bruce, for those who don't understand what a CS is, a case supervisor and an auditor, would you like to briefly explain what that is in the world of Scientology?
Okay. So an auditor, they use the word counselor, which it's a bit of a misnomer, I think, because you're not really counseling anybody.
No shit.
But in the outside world, the WOG world, you know, a psychologist and stuff, they're sometimes referred to as counselors. They do counseling. But an auditor is someone who guides a person, a so-called pre-clear or a pre-OT.
All right, you're still speaking Greek. So maybe you're not in the outside world enough yet, Bruce. So I will explain it. So okay. An auditor in Scientology is just a word that means somewhat counselor. Young children can become auditors in Scientology. They have really no training in doing anything but administering Scientology technology. And a CS stands for case supervisor. And that is the person who is always listening and watching your confidential sessions. But a CS is like a person who oversees that the auditor is doing exactly per the book, the technology of Scientology. You think that's a good basic definition of what a CS is?
Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, perfect. Okay. Good job.
Thank you.
You could actually do a podcast on this subject.
Huh. I'll pitch it.
Okay.
So Mikey and Bruce, do you want to explain what the bridge is? Because, you know, again, I think that we need to sometimes explain these things to new people, but also it takes people some time to really get that Scientology has these things called the bridge. But, a lot of people are surprised when we show it to them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, what is the bridge?
Simply put, the bridge is Hubbard's invention of the steps that a Scientologist must follow in order to achieve what he claimed was full spiritual enlightenment. Mm-hmm. It is a series of sequential things that one must do, and you can't move on to the next one until you've paid for and participated in the one before. So he called it a bridge because he said it was the pathway or the bridge to move from a lower state of existence to this higher state of existence that he promised Scientology would provide everyone.
Right. And then let's post this on our on your blog, Mike, the bridge as well, the full bridge.
Yeah.
And onto the fairgame.com, podcast.com, right?
Right. Fairgamepodcast.com.
Yeah, because there's two sides to this bridge. And like Mike mentioned, these things are predetermined. It's not like a, you know, real counseling session where you're allowed to speak about things that maybe you think are bothering you or are bothering you. And this is not that. Scientology is a very specific, like, you just have to do how they say it, how it's laid out here on the bridge. And there's two sides. One's the training side And the other side is called processing, which is another word for
auditing, counseling, whatever. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So let's take a stab at this. Bruce, what do you say?
Sounds good.
I figured, Leah, we could start with the introductory levels of, like, because this bridge has sort of three main parts, the introduction and indoctrination into Scientology, and then the levels of Dianetics and Scientology that get you up to the state of clear, and then the so-called operating Thetan or OT levels, which is the sort of ultimate thing to be accomplished in Scientology. But I figured that we could start right at the bottom and address the introductory services, which are both designed to first attract and get someone interested, and then to sort of move them onto this bridge so that they start taking and paying for more and more services.
And the one thing I wanted to ask Bruce before we start, Bruce, I mentioned at the top, like, you know, people are not really allowed to talk about the things that they want to talk about, things they think are bothering them in their lives. And as a CS, you know, the auditor has to write down everything that the person says, who's the client, and that's being recorded. And you as the CS either watch the tape or read the auditor's notes, right, of what the person said. Right. And I'm sure this has come across your desk as a CS, where you have somebody who's like, listen, you know, I just don't want to do this stuff. I want to talk about the loss of my dad, the loss of my mom. Or, and as a CS, what do you think when you see those things in people's folders where they're paying for this, but being saying they don't, this is not helping them, or they want to move on to something else, or they want to do something different? As a CS, what did you think and do when you saw that?
Well, as a CS, first of all, there's sort of this general premise that the person being audited, he doesn't know what's wrong with him.
Right.
And because it's all in his reactive mind, which is below his level of awareness. And so you have to guide that person through these specific steps. Mm-hmm. And if he's trying to say, oh, well, listen, I'm interested in something else. Mm-hmm. There's sort of twofold thing there. The key would be how the auditor handles that. Mm-hmm. And so that would be an origination, which you handle as an auditor according to a certain way. And if the auditor didn't do that, if he didn't kind of acknowledge that person and smoothly get them back on the process that the auditor is trying to do, that auditor would get corrected or canned.
Right. So taking up your first point, it's not so much that the person was saying, I don't want to do something. Your focus as a CS was to make sure that the auditor acknowledged it correctly and just got them onto the thing that they're supposed to be doing, not the thing that they wanted to do.
Right.
Okay.
And along with that goes the idea that if you were to allow that pre-clear, that client to direct what he's going to talk about, you would be doing him a disservice.
Which is interesting, right? Because in real therapy, I mean, you're paying for it. Not that a good therapist wouldn't, but they certainly wouldn't think that you know not what you're talking about and that you need to be redirected to do just what you think the person should be doing. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So it really isn't about the person really getting better. It's about them moving on the precise points of the bridge.
Right.
Yeah. But which you're not thinking
that. And,
the theory
and what you are told constantly is that by doing that and by following these exact steps, you will ultimately attain this great state or relief from whatever the problem is, et cetera, et cetera. You just have to, like, trust the process. And if you trust the process, you'll eventually get there. And there's no deviating from that process, as Bruce said. It's clearly laid out. This is what you do. And once you've done this, you now do this. And once you've done that, you now do that. And now you address communication, and now you address problems, and now you address relief. And like, there are all these things that are like laid out very, very specifically, which ultimately we'll get to and go through in some detail, because it's interesting to look at it now in hindsight and go, wow, this is some system that Hubbard developed here that really kind of traps you.
But
let's get let's deal with the introduction, because one of the most important things in Scientology is to get new people in.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an area that they're having a great deal of difficulty with now, because everybody's got Google. So it's not quite so easy to get people to come into Scientology as it used to be, when they didn't really have anywhere to go to find out anything other than what they were being told by the person who was trying to get them in.
Right.
But there are two main avenues that Scientology uses to attract new customers. One is this thing called testing, and the other is using the e-meter as a sort of a gimmick.
The stress test that they give
introduction
out on the street.
That they try and attract people with.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go to the tests first, Leah, because
this
is the most common thing. When you're walking down the street, someone who's a Scientology staff member, called a body router in Scientology.
Right.
Literally, I am going to move your body into our building and sit you down and get you to carry out a test. And it's called a personality test. And it is variously known as the Oxford Capacity Analysis, the OCA, the personality test, the APA, the American something or other analysis, blah, 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 blah. And this is a completely invented tool that Hubbard originally had someone create for him back in the 50s and then updated it subsequently. And it is a tool that, you know, you sit and you fill out 200 questions with mostly or more inclined, don't know, or less inclined. And then you get this graph presented or shown to you. The trick of this, it's like a carnival trick. Every person that takes this test fails, meaning they are told that there are things that are wrong with them that this test shows, and that only Scientology can help them solve that particular problem.
Right.
And this is something that is used extremely broadly in Scientology and has had some success. You know, I when I was preparing for this thing, I went and looked up some of the stuff that Hubbard said about how you deal with these people, like how you get new people into Scientology and what they do and what sort of person you want to have dealing with these new public, which are called, in Hubbard's term and in Scientology, raw meat.
Right.
That's what the WOGs, the non-Scientologists, who are potential new customers, are called in Scientology, raw meat.
Yeah.
And he wrote this thing that says that, and all of this is with the idea that you have to have a constant flow of people coming into Scientology in order to generate income, because everybody has to pay for these. So the only services that are free in Scientology is like this test, or showing you a free film at the outset, or this e-meter stress test. They're free, and they are designed to get you to then take your first paid service.
Right.
Which is a And the first paid services generally are very inexpensive and made to seem very appealing, and they've got nothing. We'll get to them. But I found it fascinating when I looked at this policy letter by Hubbard, where he says that the people that you select to deal with the raw meat are, this is what it says, control equals income. Dominance of others is a control symptom. We're not looking for pleasant control. We are looking for effective control. It is necessary that our best control people come into the closest contact with the public. Income is proportional to the control exertion of our personnel. And that pretty much sums up the entirety of the subject of getting new people into Scientology.
Right. Yeah. And you're, and to just add to that, I don't know if you want to go through this, Mike, but if you notice that the introductory services on the bridge,
yeah,
and anybody can, you know, look this up. It'll be on Mike's blog and on our website. They have a book one route. They have the anatomy of human mind route, purification route, the way to happiness route, and the Hubbard key to life course route. Now, these introductory services are not on the bridge, everybody. They're not even on the bridge. It's below the bridge, right? This is the, although the purification route is, right? Purification rundown.
Well, see, some of these are funny. They're introductory routes, but they're also the beginning of the bridge
things. Yeah, because the purification rundown is mandatory. Like, again, there's things you cannot not do in Scientology, which I don't actually know of one thing that I've ever gotten away with. Being a Scientologist, it wasn't like, oh, you don't have to do that course, or like I've had to do them all. So I don't know what courses are optional, but probably the basic courses, right? The life improvement courses or something you're not forced to do if they already got you.
Right. Like a bunch of these are things that hopefully will entice you to make your next step and
purchase. That's your next purchase.
Right. And that is where you get to the actual things that are on the grade chart. Which start with the purification rundown.
And that's, go ahead.
And I was going to say, and perhaps Bruce can give us a description of what the purification rundown is for people so that they understand what that is, because everybody is required to do that as the beginning of their progress in Scientology. And it costs, costs you $2,500 or $5,000, whatever it is. So.
Yeah. And Mike, you are required to do it several times in Scientology, even though you did it when you were first introduced into Scientology, forced to do it, forced to pay for it. You're often told you have to do it several times and pay for it throughout your Scientology career.
Yeah. If there's a way of like everything else, if there is a way of getting someone to redo something that they've already done,
yeah,
it's easy money.
Yeah. And know? Bruce, as a CS, I mean, I'm sure you've come across this many times because they have to go through you to say, this is what we suggest for the client, right? And you have to say yay or nay, right?
Yeah. The CS is the one that determines that.
And but that said, have you seen that a few times where you're like, why is this person being required to do another purification rundown?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And not just that, but other steps on the bridge that, and the odd thing about it is the CS is considered to be this sort of really smart person who knows all the tech and makes the right decisions. Right. It usually the decisions are made in the context of some campaign that's coming down from management.
Meaning Dave Miscavige?
Well, probably, yeah. He's the one that could, you know, say, oh, look at everybody, everyone did the purif wrong. Oh, God. And some SP got in the way, and that's why everyone did it wrong. So now we got to get everyone to redo it. So UCS is, you know, you need to look for this. And so the CSs who want to be good little soldiers, they will, like, CS that whenever they can. And if they all know it's going to make money for the org, and it's a way to get people to sign up for a service. So, you know, the CS should be, the idea is that the CS is uncompromising, is just going to do what's standard, but that's not true.
Right, right, right. And by the way, what is standard? I mean, yeah. So, Gad, you wanted to explain the Purif?
I think that that would be helpful to people. Yeah. I will also add a link to a thing that I put on my blog about the purification program.
Okay, great. Which...
All right, so the Purif, or the purification rundown, as it's called, it's a activity that a person generally spends 5 hours a day on, and the majority of that 5 hours is spent in a sauna. So you sweat a lot. You're supposed to do a little bit of sort of mild exercise at the beginning to get your blood flowing. But most people kind of skimp on that part. And then while you're sweating all this out, you have to drink plenty of fluids, of course, because you're sweating a lot. For 5 hours of sweating is really a lot of sweating. And you're taking in some minerals. They have some tablets that you take, and then also specific, in particular, calcium and magnesium that are given to you in this awful tasting drink called CalMag. And the one of the biggest parts is extremely high doses of vitamins, way, way more than is recommended by medical people, real medical people.
Like niacin. And,
well, that's the one I was going to just mention because that's the key one. You start off at 100 milligrams a day, and that's like a 100 or 1,000 times more than is what is recommended, because it can actually can be toxic, it can damage your liver. And then you that increases, that dosage of niacin increases until you get up to 5,000 milligrams. That's 5 grams of niacin in a day. And the other vitamins, the B complex and the A and E and these other ones, they go up. Along with those dosages go up along with the niacin dosage. And there are plenty of things you can find on the internet of people who did have health problems because they followed this regimen of the purification rundown. The idea is that it's supposed to flush out drugs that somehow remained in your body like for years, which has been disproven, by the way, and or toxins that you somehow came into contact with.
Radiation, right? From watching television.
Yeah, right. That's another one is radiation. And when you take more niacin than you're supposed to, your body reacts and you flush. And so you turn red and you feel kind of tingly and it's not that pleasant. But and they're saying like, oh, well, that's radiation that's being run out of your body. Like you should experience that. It's a good thing. And they say that these things get stored in the fat. So you have to drink oil every day, like a certain amount of oil. And that this, the all these chemicals that are in your body are in the fat and they have to come out through the fat. And that's also totally disproven by, you know, a lot of research. All these claims are made and taken as gospel by Scientologists.
Yeah. And by the way, they allow children to do this verification rundown. Yeah. And Bruce, I mean, obviously we all believed in it. We all did the Purif. And at the time, Bruce, I mean, anybody could say, well, we all know it's now disproven, right? Nobody ever bothered, including myself, to look these things up. Because to do so, again, I'm going to reiterate this probably every show. If you do things like that, you have to be ready to leave everything you have ever known. That's including exactly your right. family. So we had no reason to mistrust a church that we've been raised in, our own parents, husbands and wives. And by the way, Bruce, I mean, and same with Mike and myself, I'm sure every day, because we are forced to write success stories, right? When you finish a Scientology course or a purification rundown, anything, You are sent to an office and you're forced to write a success story. And there's really something about that because, Mike, here's Bruce, a CS, right? He goes, well, look at this success story. The guy says, I can breathe again. I could see colors again. I can taste food better. Like, he's seeing these success stories come across his desk. He's gonna think, well, this is actually changing people. But we all said the same thing.
Of course, because you're reading them too.
Yes.
I mean, the purpose of these success stories is for publication.
Right.
In fact, you have to sign okay to publish at the end.
Right.
And what happens is this is like...
it's like you're bullied into writing this fictional story of what you are now feeling and what the end phenomena is, because you're like, well, I'll have to redo it if I don't say I want to write a success story. Or that I don't feel any better, right, Mike? Like,
of course,
yeah.
But there's also this concept of peer pressure, Leo,
yes,
which is
inordinately
powerful force. You know, I've mentioned it before, but there are all these experiments that have been done of people who are sitting there with six other people, and they don't know that they're the only guinea pig. And the six other people, when asked which is the shorter line of the two, pick the longer one, obviously longer, and eventually the guy who is the guinea pig will go along with it because everybody else is saying it. So when you're in Scientology and you see everybody else saying, oh my God, I had this incredible experience on the purification program. I feel so much lighter and better. I can smell good. I can sleep well. I can do this. I mean, whatever these things are, you're going in your own mind, well, I guess I need to be having those sort of things. Otherwise, I'm going to be considered a degraded being or a suppressive person. Because there are also these categories that are very clearly delineated in Scientology of people on whom Scientology supposedly does not work.
Right. That's the merchants of chaos.
And those people
who
Scientology doesn't work on, there is something seriously fucking wrong with those people.
Seriously wrong.
And you don't want to be one of those people.
Right.
It's like... So you go
along with the program. You're right. Yeah.
Exactly. And so it's not even necessarily bullying. It's this idea that you get this group of people and everybody's saying the same shit and they're all like, wow, this is great. This is great. And the people are sort of standing around who haven't done it yet going, well, boy, I hope I make that. I hope that happens to me. And then when they get on it, they go, well, I better be saying something good, otherwise I'm going to be treated as a pariah.
Yes, I guess my little gaslighter, that is bullying. Because
there's another aspect to the success story.
Yeah.
As a case supervisor, part of the job is to review every success story for every auditing action that the person does. Right. And if that success story is not quote unquote rave, they use the word, it has to be a rave success story, the CS is bound to order that particular action be corrected.
Right.
They have to get auditing or they have to go do something.
Right. So you're penalized. You're penalized for not even writing a great review for something that has to do with you. You should be able to go, it was okay. You know, I look forward to the next thing. I didn't love, you know, sitting in the sauna for 5 hours and having a reaction that could potentially, you know, kill me. Other than that, like, it was fine. You know what I mean? My skin's nicer.
Right.
Those
corrective actions, the client has to pay for.
Right. Exactly.
So early on, when you finish an action, you learn that, if I don't act really happy and really rave, it's going to cost me money.
Right.
So they're conditioned to think, I feel great. That was so incredible. I need to think up some things to say about it that prove that I really had a wonderful experience here, even if you didn't.
And by the way, like, now that we're talking about it, it's really sick. I mean, it's more sick than I even, like, think about this, Mike. Could you imagine you go into a restaurant, you write a Yelp review, you're like, wasn't like the best steak I ever had, you know? And then there's a knock on your door. Excuse me. What the fuck is this? there's a serious, you have a serious issue, right? It wasn't the stake. It's you. You have serious issues. And so we want you to repay for the stake. I mean, this is a horrible example, but it's insane to think that you're going in paying for the spiritual guidance and counseling, and you have to literally lie or you're going to get punished and pay, like Bruce said, and pay for it again. And you're right. You get conditioned to think I have to write a success story that will get me through. And you're like, what am I getting through? I'm actually lying to get to the next spot on the bridge. If this is an indication that it's going to suck here, your experience is going to suck. You're not going to get what you paid for. And by the way, what do they promise? What is the end phenomena?
Oh, I have that. Highlighted because I wanted to bring this up and ask Bruce about this.
All right.
On the current grade chart, the end phenomenon, which is what you're supposed to achieve from the purification,
which is what you're what they're promising you. This is what your money's going to buy you. Go ahead.
Right. Freedom from the restimulative effects of drugs, residuals, and other toxins. Now, let me ask you. What actually frees you in the world of Scientology from restimulation? Eradicating the reactive mind. I mean, this is a very, I just looked at this and I highlighted it while I was sitting here. Freedom from the restimulative effects of drug residuals and other toxins? You mean that you can undo the restimulative effects of drugs by something other than Dianetics auditing?
What say you, Bruce? Because that would be a question that a customer should be asking their auditor or their CS. What would be the answer to that?
Well, for one thing, you know, the client doesn't look at the end phenomena, that column, and evaluate it by, oh, let's see. Am I freed from the restimulative effects of drug residuals? Well, you know, they don't even do that. They
yeah, but like, here's the thing.
I made Bruce, it through here, and God, yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Right. You're right. They don't want to question. You're right. They're like, don't give a shit. They're like, let me just get through this. I don't give a fuck what you supposedly you're supposed to be giving me here.
Because you know, Leah, if you wrote a success story saying, I am now free from the restimulative effects of drug residuals and other toxins, that would not be considered a rave success story.
No. But no, Mike, you have to gush. You know
what's interesting is that you're not saying the drug residuals are out of my body. You're saying they're not restimulating me. So I wonder if it's a legal out for them because it's been proven that it doesn't get rid of any drug residuals.
Right. But then if you're not addressing the reactive mind, Bruce, how is it doing that?
Well, I know. I get that point, too. But I'm just wondering if it's some sort of protection to them, the way they word that.
Oh, probably.
All of these wordings are really crazy now.
But for shits and giggles, Bruce, what would be the answer to that if a customer had asked that question and said that, what Mike is saying? Like, why would I do a Purif if I'm going to do Dianetics, if I have Dianetics? Why would I do a Purif and vice versa? Why would I do any Dianetic auditing if I have the Purif?
Well, I mean, there were answers to that in other writings on the Purif that it's these drug residuals in the body and they inhibit you from experiencing the full gains of auditing.
So the reason why I'm not feeling joy is because of my drugs, of the drugs in my system. Let's say after I was like, this is not great. I didn't love the Purif at all. I couldn't wait to be done with it. So now that I got up to 5,000 niacin and I'm no longer producing a reaction, which is what you have to get to, it sucked. I didn't love it. But I'm ready for the next thing.
So the CS would say, this person is dissatisfied. This person has ARC breaks.
So let's not use a lot of terminology that people don't know.
So this person is exhibiting phenomena, which shows that he needs some repair auditing.
And this would, again, be at my cost?
At your cost.
Okay.
And if that went on and the person still went on saying, oh, I didn't think the Purif was so good. I mean, what, you know, it was horrible or whatever, or it's, if it's, they just aren't rave about it.
Yeah. They just said, it's okay. I'm just ready for the next thing. I don't, you know,
eventually if you try to repair it, you try to repair it, nothing happens. Mm. You get sent to ethics.
Ethics is the department in Scientology where you get in trouble that administers justice on you. Go ahead.
Because the idea would be like, well, this person has an out ethics, an unethical situation in their life that's like getting in the way here. Or
so Scientology is the only business that is infallible. There's nothing like it. So it's never Scientology going, huh, maybe this isn't great. Like, we didn't deliver a great service. There's something wrong with the customer.
That's one of
Could you imagine if businesses did this? Businesses everywhere right now are going, fuck, we're doing it wrong. But we're trying to keep our customers happy. Yeah.
Right. Uh-huh. But there is a fundamental datum that Hubbard explained, which is, if someone doesn't get the results out of the tech and you do all the steps necessary and, you know, laid out to repair it, then there is a law in Scientology that the reason that tech is not going in is that ethics is out.
You mean tech, the Scientology technology, right?
Meaning the reason the auditing is not working ultimately is because the person is doing bad shit.
They're a bad person, and
that needs to be uncovered, what it is that they are doing and what unethical activities they are engaged in. And when that is resolved, then they will be ready to go write good success stories.
So this bullying, like Bruce was saying, it sends a message to the person getting into Scientology. If I don't write these success stories, if I don't give rave reviews in-house, then I'm out.
Yep.
I'm out. Okay. Yeah. I think that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah. and that person who walked out of the ethics office after whatever they had to do there to become sort of back in good standing, so to speak, they think to themselves, well, I'm not doing that again. Yes. Next time they ask me, I'm going to say I'm a really happy camper.
And there are people out there that are probably saying, well, why wouldn't you just leave Scientology? I mean, that's a horrible experience to have. Why would anybody continue in Scientology after receiving this type of treatment?
Well, plenty of them do leave.
Yeah.
I mean, there are plenty of people who leave, you know.
That's true.
Look at us. We have all left, and there is plenty of others. But there are also, like you said, Leah, there is a lot of other factors that go into this. Oftentimes, someone who is in Scientology is in because they have been brought in by other family members.
Right.
So they have to consider whether they wish to have their family disconnect from them.
Yes,
they've been
yes.
brought in because they work in a business that's owned by a Scientologist.
Yes.
And if they don't toe the line and be a good Scientologist, they're going to get fired. Mm-hmm. So there's other factors that go into this that have a great impact on someone's willingness to continue. And and nowadays you see people who stay around the fringes, don't participate in actual auditing or training in Scientology, but don't publicly depart.
Right.
And they call themselves under the radar. That's become the term that describes that. And the reason that they don't, you know, publicly depart and say, you know, fuck all you and the horse you rode in on, I'm out of here, is because they're worried about losing their job or they're worried about losing their family.
Right.
So I also want to go back to something that you and Bruce both brought up about being required to redo things. Mm-hmm. You know, the other crazy thing in Scientology is there is a constant redo of this stuff that is supposedly what's called in Scientology standard tech. So you have even the most fundamental course in Scientology, which is called the Student Hat, mm-hmm. which is a course which is based on a number of tapes and writings of L. Ron Hubbard about how you go about studying. And I'm not going to get into all the theory, but yeah. it's been that way since 1965 or whenever mm-hmm. it was that this yeah. first came up.
Yeah.
And there is three phenomena of study. There is the misunderstood word, the skip gradient, and the lack of mass. And those yeah. three things are, that's study tech.
Yeah.
Okay. 2 years ago, for the fourth time, David Miscavige decides, oh, study tech and the student hat course was not standard. I have now developed a new one, brand new edition of the student hat. It's way better than the last one, even though it's, you can't change anything that Hubbard ever said.
Right.
So that then gets issued broadly in Scientology, and every single Scientologist is required to do this course
redo it. Redo it. After they've done it originally.
And pay for it again.
Yes.
Many people have paid for that course four times.
And it's like an $800 course.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I think it might be $2,500 now. It's hard to tell what their pricing is.
Yeah.
But what you talk, and what made me think about this was you talking about, well, I did a bad review on Yelp. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine if you went to a restaurant and they serve you a steak with maggots in it,
mm-hmm.
told you it was the finest steak in the world,
mm-hmm.
and then they came along and said, oh, sorry, we gave you a steak with maggots in it, so now we're going to give you a good one, but you have to pay for it again.
You have to pay for it, yeah.
And then that one, they say, oh, well, that one actually, you know, that one fell on the floor, so it's got, you know,
yeah,
disease all over it, so mm-hmm. we're going to give you another one, but you have to pay for it again.
Right.
I mean, it's so insane that Scientologists have been conditioned to believe that it's never the organization's fault, never the technology's fault. It's always somehow their fault, and they've got to keep paying.
Well, I mean, you're right. And Bruce, I have firsthand experience of this because I remember, you know, constantly being told, you know, I got to redo this, redo that. And I go, so who fucked this one up now? Oh, it was the public, you know, when it was published, the Dianetics, when it was printed, there were typos in it. I go, so whose fucking fault is that? Why do I got to pay for that again? Well, I mean, you have to pay for it because, you know, look, you know, we Sea Org members, they get $50 a week, and, you know, you pay for it because you want to support your church, Leah. That's why you pay for it. Okay. And throughout my Scientology career, I was like, so this was fucked up and that's fucked up and I got to redo this again, buy this book package again. Is there ever a time you guys are responsible for the condition that you're in? Because that's what we're told. And the CS would then CS me for interrogations. There's something wrong with Leah. Again, she's questioning things. She's got crimes that she's hiding from us. She's critical of us, and critical in a bad way. Scientology uses their definition of critical. That means if you have anything of truth to say about Scientology, it means you have crimes that you're hiding from Scientology.
And that's one of the key mind control techniques.
Yeah.
If you're critical of us, you know, if you think we're doing something wrong, it's you.
Right.
It's not us. We're perfect. You've done bad things, and you're not telling us. And you're going to have to pay so we can find out what those are.
Right. Right. And and we all put up with it. I mean, we're laughing, but, you know, there's a piece of me that feels really stupid sometimes.
Oh, I feel really stupid a lot of the time. All the stuff I tell.
Well, we're not as stupid as the people that are still there doing it.
Yeah, that's right. There's something to be
That's always the plus.
Yeah.
Because it's gotten way worse even than when any of us were there. I mean, it's absurd the things that they are doing now. And like this student hat thing is like the classic example. I mean,
right. And again, let's remember, these are mandatory courses. These are not optional things you could do. The bridge cost money.
Right.
They are not optional.
Right.
Let's go over the key to life course.
Oh. I know a lot about the key to life.
That's another introductory service. Can you talk a little bit about the key to life course, Mike? And what is the end phenomena of this? Do you know? Well, what are they selling here?
I don't know. I don't know what that is. But the key to life course
teaches someone to become literate, a literate Scientologist who can express himself easily and clearly, both verbally and in writing, and can fully understand the communication he receives from others.
Oh, there you go. Excellent.
Yeah.
There's only one slight problem with this.
What?
This course is no longer sold.
What? What do you mean?
This is one of those ones that at some point David Miscavige decided that this course was a squirrel course, that it was out tech, that it wasn't standard. So it is no longer available. You cannot get this course in Scientology anymore.
Well, I want you to know that kills me because I hated this course. It was I want to say $6,000 or $8,000 course, Mike.
Probably.
I mean, the volumes, the voluminous books of, we had to look up the word A that had 25 definitions. This was one of the worst courses ever, like this and the solo course. And it was a fortune. And so, Mike, why were you laughing? Because what did you have to do with this course?
I was the first guinea pig, along with three other people, to ever do this course.
Oh, my God. And what did you think?
Before it was published or released, I was the person, I was brought to the international base at Gilman Hot Springs, along with three other people from the Commodore's Messenger organization, and put through this course when it was still,
pilot.
Handwritten, typed on 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper with little stick drawings, because there's a lot of drawings in this, if you remember. There's cartoons now that were done by Disney artists and et cetera, et cetera. But back then it was stick men. And this course was Hubbard's latest solution to the fact that staff were incompetent. Right. There were many, many things in Scientology, including what they call now superpower, which is the great thing that is provided only at the Flag Service Organization. Superpower originally started as Hubbard's solution to how incompetent all the people at the international base, he claimed that how incompetent they all were. And so they needed all these different things. And that was the same with Key to Life. The fact that they could not read and understand English was the fundamental cause of all the problems in Scientology. Hmm. And this is sort of another thing that I know Bruce is very familiar with. The fads in Scientology are astonishing. You go from, and that was what he was talking about, the case supervisors in organizations around the world are suddenly told, you need to do X because it's some new fad. And everybody then gets put onto whatever the new fad is for as long as that lasts, and then move on to the next thing. And for a while, Key to Life was the big fad, and it was the solution to all problems. Everybody that had an issue, everybody who wasn't making it through their OT levels, who wasn't getting through the Purif, who wasn't getting through this, they had to be put on the Key to Life because that was the solution. Until subsequently the next problem and the next big fad comes, and now it's you have to do what's called TRs and objectives, which is these weird drills that you do, and that became the next big fad. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure, Bruce, you've seen, I mean, just like I have, and Leah has, fads in Scientology are the sort of the standard practice.
Yeah. You know, there's a couple aspects of that. One, whatever is written in Scientology, whatever piece of tech, you can find it another place where something is written that contradicts that. So you can always go to the other thing.
Yeah.
In when I was in senior CS Int office, senior CS International, I was assigned to do an eval. And the subject of the eval was that the tech stacks, the delivery statistics, and this is how much auditing, how many student points and values of services delivered, they had dropped internationally from a point, I think if I remember, it was in 1989. That was the highest they'd ever gotten, and they haven't been even close to that since. But in my evaluation, which I don't know if I can go into explaining what an eval is, but anyway, I found that it was the implementation of the key to life delivery that had pulled all of the technical staff in Scientology organizations around the world off of what they were doing. And they were forced to be sent to Los Angeles for special training on key to life. And basically the technical delivery areas of every org in the world was torn apart. So I put this in my eval, but it didn't get approved, obviously. But that all came from the very top. RTC was the one that ran that, the Religious Technology Center. They're the ones that heavily pushed that all of the orgs send these people to get training on key to life. And then everybody, even if you were in the middle of some other auditing, you know, step on the bridge or auditing action, they had to go on to key to life. And it really messed everything up for what they had going. Now, what they had going before was still bad, but it's still with the success they were having, in my view, that was a turning point.
Well, when we talk about success, when it comes to Scientology, we're not talking about people getting better in life, people
it's their statistics.
Right, their own statistics, which is, you know, people in the chair, people buying services. So it's never based on anything that's decent or church-like. I mean, it's based on statistics like in any other business.
Yeah.
And I keep pushing that because I want to just remind people that we're talking about a tax-exempt church, not a business.
Right. Brings up the point that we always want to make in every edition of the Fair Game podcast.
Yes.
There is in Scientology a price list for services. Right. In fact,
it is not tithing, it's not what you want to give.
Price for every single thing. And like I said, the only things that you get for free in Scientology are the first baited hook with tests or emitter stress test or whatever. Those things are the only things that are free. And then there are beginning services like these life improvement courses that may be, you know, $65 or $100 or whatever as sort of a the next step from free to now just a bit of money. To then you get to the real shit and where you're expected to really hand over some bucks for everything, that all of those things have an exact price, that you get discounts if you pay for more of them in advance, you get discounts, you get commissions, you get this, you get that. It's all entirely and utterly commercial. And this is what is so hard to understand, as how the IRS managed to accept that, even in the face of a Supreme Court decision, which said that this is absolutely a quid pro quo and is not tax deductible. But nevertheless, there we go. And not only that, there are people in Scientology. I read that quote earlier on, where we talk about, where he talks about control and controlling people. There are people in Scientology who are fundraisers, and they're called registrars in Scientology, and their job is to get people's money, and they are trained to extract money. They are required to do a course of salesmanship called Big League Sales. Mm-hmm. This is mandatory for all Scientology registrars to learn how to handle the, quote, brick overcoats of sales resistance. And the technology, quote unquote, that Hubbard has for how you go about doing this is to find the person's ruin. Mm-hmm. And this is talked about a lot in Scientology, that the way that you get someone to give you money for Scientology services is to find what it is that is the thing that they want to deal with, their ruin, whether it's talking to girls or they've got a bum leg, or being
more successful.
They want to be more successful, or they have difficulties with money or whatever. That if you can isolate exactly what that is and start pushing on that and tell them that Scientology will handle that problem. And that is the exact phrase. Scientology has the answers to that, or Scientology will handle that, or Scientology can handle that. Then you will get them to fork over their money. Right. And I want to say something else, and I know I'm talking a lot in this episode, but I want to say something else about the handing over of money. Money and the fact that you have invested money in doing this service, whether it's auditing, whether it's the purification program, the key to life, or whatever, is another powerful motivation as to why you want it to work and why you will write a success story saying that it did, because you have invested in that service.
Yeah. With your time and money.
Yes.
Yeah.
And emotion.
Yeah. Because listen, you know, I have a therapist. She's not free.
Right.
But it's not, I don't have to talk to her. I don't have to do it. And I either see changes in my life or I don't. She's not forcing me to write success stories. If I say, hey, listen, I'm good. We don't need to talk for right now. Okay, honey. You know, there's no one showing up to my house. My family's not putting pressure. Why are you not talking to your therapist? You know, what are you doing to your life? Your eternity is at stake and all this. And big difference. And she has credentials. Let's not forget, nothing in Scientology is scientific. Nothing in Scientology is beneficial, is from anything that is maybe useful in one of the basic courses comes from someplace else, doesn't even come from Scientology. So anyway, I only wanted to make that point.
Mike, on the subject of the ruin, if we could circle back to the Oxford capacity analysis for a second.
Yes.
So that's one of the tools used particularly on new people to find a person's ruin. And this test is so fraudulent. There were some people in England in the late 60s who they went into different Scientology orgs. They were not Scientologists, and they were trying to see what this Oxford capacity analysis was. And they had a strategy on how they were going to answer the questions. And so one person did it totally randomly. They didn't even read the question. The other person had a system whereby if the question ended in a consonant in the first half of the alphabet, they answered yes. If it ended in a consonant in the second half of the alphabet, they answered no. And if it ended in a vowel, they answered maybe. And then the third person did just the opposite of that. There was another person who went in and just answered maybe on every single question. And they all ended up with this test result where it's low on the left, low on the right. And these are in areas where it says right on the evaluation graph that you get that this needs urgent attention. These are points that need urgent attention. And they use those points. You're going to be almost regardless how you do the test, how good you are, you're going to end up with these points that, quote unquote, need urgent attention. And the person who then evaluates the the graph, the OCA, who is actually a salesperson, they use that to dig into your life and try to find what it is that's ruining it. And that's one of the key mechanisms on how they get people hooked at the beginning. Once you start take that initial bite, they have other mechanisms, but that first bite is really, really key.
And also, I want to make sure that we understand when we say, you know, because it sounds like it's a good thing when you're saying they're trying to find the thing that ruins the person. You know, a ruin in Scientology is just a way in to get the person's money. They actually don't take whatever, like if somebody says, look, you know, I lost my wife or husband or, you know, partner in life, and that's ruining my life. Your only answer is Scientology can help you with that. That's not written down anywhere. Like, we should really help this person get through this very horrible time of their life. Like, that's they're just looking for a string to pull to get you to pay money in Scientology. They're not actually looking to help you.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It is a technique.
Yes. Yes. A sales technique.
Get you to remove the bricks in the brick overcoat of sales resistance.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
That is exactly what it is.
Yes. Just want to remind people. Because I was sitting here going, well, that's not so bad. I mean, they should find, you know, somebody to care about what's ruining your life is a beautiful thing to help you with that. You know what I mean?
Right.
But that's not the purpose of it. The purpose is to get the, like exactly what Mike said, to remove the block so they can get your money.
Right. And it, whatever that is, that ruin, just like we talked about earlier, that isn't what will be addressed.
No.
No, you are going to follow the steps that are laid out on the Bridge to Total Freedom. You're not going to be going and, like, right away dealing with the fact that I have an upset about how my mother dealt with me, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So, and they just tell you that you will and get you going. And, you know, I do also want to say that the dropout rate of people from these introductory services is very high.
And I'm going to tell you why. Remember, we were talking earlier about why people are going to ask, like, why not leave after this point? Now, people who come in, let's say on an introductory service, like a life improvement courses that are at the, you know, again, these are not on the bridge. This is what Scientology uses when we always expose the amount of money Scientology costs. They go, well, we have this course. And if you go on their website, you'll see there's like 200 courses, you know, how to success through communication, how to have a better marriage, how to be a better parent. You know, there's these little courses, $65, $85, $200. They seem logical. You know, you go in, personal values and integrity. Who doesn't want any of these things? These all sound great. They go in. Now, people who come in on these introductory services, like we're talking about, these introductory courses, Mike, that are cheap.
Yeah.
And fairly easy to do. They're not unpleasant. But what happens is what the person's not really prepared for, if they're not raised in a Scientology organization or they don't work for a Scientologist, and they're just some person who had the unfortunate luck of being on Hollywood Boulevard or on their college campus or at a pier, you know, trying to get a fucking beignet or some shit, you know, and they go, you know what? I'll take this test. You know what I mean? Yep. I'll see what's up, you know, if I could do a course. These people, they go in, they take the course. They're not really prepared for a teenager in a uniform to say, what time are you going to be here? What's your schedule going to be every day? And then call you when you're not there and go, what's the problem? Why are you not here? When are you making up the time? A course you paid for, by the way. And then you decide at the end, you know, this isn't really for me. You know, it was great. You don't write a success story, let's say. You don't want to go to the sales office because they have to re-sign you. They have to literally take you from your completion of your course to another room. And it says the person has to re-sign. And if they don't re-sign, there's a problem with that person, right?
Right.
They're not prepared for any of that shit.
Right.
So they're like, yo, fuck this. I'm out.
Right.
Most people,
they're
who
also,
come in.
they're also not prepared for being constantly grabbed as soon as they walk into the organization with people saying, we need you to give money for the International Association of Scientologists. We need you to join staff. Come on, join staff. We need you to buy another course. It's like we need you to buy books.
It's like walking into a car dealership. If anybody's walked into a car dealership without an appointment, like you'll just tons. It's the same thing in a Church of Scientology. People are coming up to you. You want to buy this? You want to buy this? You want to buy this?
I take real offense to that.
Sorry, Mike.
I sold cars for a living.
I know. I'm sorry.
It was not anything like that.
Really? You didn't walk up to a person just going, I'm fucking looking. Can you give me a second? And you're like, okay, my name is Mike. My name is Mike. If you need anything. Okay.
Of course. But if you need anything.
Yeah. Actually, you're right. This is an insult to car dealerships.
You would walk away and let the person stand there for a while.
But, Mike,
but in Scientology, that's not the case.
You're right. This is an insult to car dealerships because you're absolutely right.
If you walk in and you're in negotiation to buy one car, there isn't four other people coming up and trying to sell you a second one and a third one and a fourth one before you even get out of the dealership.
That's true.
They'll stick with the one.
That's true. The other thing that people are not prepared for, Mike, is learning a whole new language.
Right.
Because they realize pretty quickly and that they have to look up every word they don't understand. You're not allowed to yawn while studying Scientology. You're not allowed to scratch your head. So you're being supervised as you're studying. And if you, God forbid, yawn, you are pulled into another room and they ask you, what's the definition of this? They go over every page, every word you just read. And then they make you, you know, if you can't define the, you know, all 25, 30 definitions of the or that, you're going to be sent back to read page one all over again from wherever they found the word. You're going to reread and get retested. And I think you're right, Mike. There's people who come in at this level, you know, like quote unquote normal people are not fucking with Scientology long term.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You're absolutely right.
Right.
Anything you want to add, Bruce? Because you've been very quiet.
Well, no, not really. that was in Denver you were selling cars, right, Mike?
Yes.
That's
Mountain
cool.
States Toyota.
Great
Free
story,
plug for
guys.
Mountain States Toyota.
great story. All right. Anything else we want to add to this, you guys, or did we pretty much cover the bottom part of?
We covered the bottom part. I mean, we could talk about this stuff forever, literally, and come up with we could go through every one of these services and have something to say about it. But I think that we've got the general gist here, and I'm looking forward to the next episode where we start really addressing auditing and going up through clear to get to the OT levels.
Yeah, and we can go into the e-meter a bit, maybe.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes. All right. Well, Bruce, thank you so much. I'm sorry that we overtalked you, but you do have a lot of value in being here, and we appreciate your time once again.
And my pleasure. Thank you.
Be sure to overtalk you next time.
One thing, you always know what you're getting.
Yeah, that's right.
You're not coming here and getting surprised.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Until next time, guys, thank you so much for listening. And thank you, guys.
Bye.
Bye.